John Boy.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not a show is worth watching. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us at www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. We're everywhere. Be sure to head to one of those places and leave us a review, and then be sure to head back to the website. Again, that's www.freedomtrainradio.com, and leave a review on the show there. Leave a comment, and maybe the person whose show you just listened to will get back to you. Also, be sure to head to www.pactsinc.org. That's PacSinc.org. PacSinc.org to show some love and support for our sponsors, PacSync, because they're doing big things. PacSync is a black activist and advocacy organization focused on developing the black community through a shift in culture, education, and economics. And as always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the black community. The things that we look at will be looked at with the racial component involved and with some lessons that can be used to improve the community. Not all of them, just some of them, so that you can go back and watch it and get out what you want to get out of the rest of it. Maybe you agree. Maybe you disagree. Maybe you see some things that we didn't talk about. Great. That's why we didn't talk about them. During this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be looking at the 2017 ESPN 30 for 30 documentary entitled The Year of the Scab. The Year of the Scab. I know we all remember that. It is a documentary about the 1987 players' strike in the NFL, during which replacement players were used to keep the league running while the players refused to play. We will also be making some comparisons between what was happening then and what is happening now. And as always, we will talk about a few lessons that can be picked from the film with regards to our current situation. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be looking at The Year of the Scab. The NFL has been in the news for the past 2 years, but not for anything remotely related to the actual game. You see, in 2016, Colin Kaepernick, regardless of how you feel about him or what he did, and a lot of people feel a lot of different ways, remained seated during the national anthem before a game back in 2016. After doing it for a few weeks in a row, with the climate being what it was and largely still is regarding fanatical patriotism, intense nationalism, and racial division, he was asked about it, and his answer would set off a war between a segment of the players and the owners, the league and its fans, and even the United States president. The president of the United States would get involved. Through all this turmoil, the ESPN 30 for 30 series, still going strong, dropped another gem to the line with all the other gems the series has produced. In September of 2017, we got The Year of the Scab by John Dorsey, a documentary about the 1987 player strike commonly known throughout sports history, the time the players agreed not to play and were replaced by substitutes pulled from all walks of life. The documentary picks up talking about the fact that players did not have a free agency. Once a team signs you, they owned your rights and you as a player, and you as a player had no say in the matter. This was done to keep team turnover low, as is stated in the film. Now, I definitely suspect that other reasons were involved, but that is, for lack of a better word, the singular reason given. in the film's next segment, which was the breaking down of the negotiations between the owners and the players, and the players announcing and then going on strike, and then the league scrambling to figure out what to do. And that's when the true focus of the film comes into light, as it zooms in on the Washington Redskins and their particular situation as the league decides to find replacement players called scabs to play while the players are on strike. And this is where most of the film is focused. The gathering of the Washington Redskins replacement players, their interaction with the city, the striking team, the coach, and the games they played for 3 weeks. But it really is heavily focused on these replacement players, more so than it is on the actual strike and what's going on. Now, as juxtaposed to the Washington Redskins, we're also given a look at the way the Dallas Cowboys franchise handled the replacement issue, which is interesting on a few levels because, well, it concerns two intense rivals. It concerns the legendary coach Tom Landry, and the Dallas Cowboys, they're one of the most well-recognized franchises in sports today in America. So anything involving the Dallas Cowboys is going to be provocative and compelling. And after it detailed the 3 weeks of replacement players, it begins to close down by talking about how the season ended and how the players were unfairly treated by the NFL, with a special focus again on the Washington Redskins. At that point, the film rounds itself off, almost making a plea for someone to do something to make amends for the terrible way the replacement players were treated. Again, with the special focus on the Washington Redskins. It looks at what a few of those players are doing currently and talks to them about how they transformed from regular life to, well, not everybody came from regular life because they pulled one guy fresh out of prison. But how they transitioned from regular life to the NFL and back again, and yes, in the case of the man that was pulled out of prison, he went back to prison in under a month for many. There are a lot of gems to pick up throughout this process with regards to where we are now with the NFL, and I'm just going to lay out a few of them in the next section. I'm going to tie these into a lot of the current narratives that we are hearing from people about what the players should do regarding the current situation in the NFL. And as we know, Colin Kaepernick said that he was protesting because of the treatment that he saw people of color receiving at the hands of police all over the country, at which point everyone got involved. The narrative got twisted. All of a sudden, it became about the flag and the national anthem. Donald Trump got involved, and it became a very popular political item for him to capitalize on during his campaign, something that he has continued to do into his presidency. The NFL owners have been compromising themselves and making incongruent statements with regards to their actions and activities and the rules that they've been putting in place. And it just turned into this whole mess. And there are a lot of similarities here again, because like in 1987, the players had a disagreement with ownership, with the league. And like in 1987, one of the key ideas to come up is that the players just shouldn't play. Now, in the film, the players immediately lost the support of the fans when they opted not to play. It's really hard for the fans to feel any sort of pity, empathy, or connection to a player making millions of dollars. And that's not just the players. That's any wealthy person. The average person in America is not going to feel a lot of sympathy for anything that they go through. And in addition to the financial pressures that they were placing on themselves, and let's face it, here we go. Because I know when we talk about this finance piece, people are always going to be kind of dismissive. Oh, well, you made $1 million. Why are you broke? Why don't you have money? This, that, and the third. And with that, I just want to try to put things into a little bit of a perspective. You see, and this is something we have to face. Having $1 million means nothing if you have $1 million in bills. And quite frankly, and this is a pattern across all pay scales, all financial statuses, all brackets. The more money you make, the more money you spend. When you get a $10,000 raise, all of a sudden you find a way to create $10,000 in bills to absorb that raise. Your quality of life increases. You pick up a new car, or you make an addition to your house, or you do something to eat into that extra money, and you don't save it. You don't put it away. So I've met far too many people making 70K plus with no family and no savings. So before people start launching off with what you do if you had $1 million, think about what you have done with the raises that some of you have already gotten. You get to be financially accustomed to living at $50,000, and then you get a $10,000 raise, and you don't put that extra money away. You quickly adjust up to account for the increase in income, and that raise vanishes. And it doesn't matter the size. I know some of you are like, well, if I got a $10,000 a year raise, but even if you got an extra $50 a week raise, how many people would put that extra $50 a week into a savings account? It's just not happening. So before we launch off into these spills about how these guys make millions of dollars and they should save this and this and this, and I'm not saying I disagree, because they should, we also have to keep in mind that we don't do those things in our own lives. So, you know, let's just try to keep things in proper perspective with regards to the finances. But to the point of them losing the support of the fans, NFL fans, as with most sports fans in general, want players to shut up and play. And that was true in 1987. It was true in 1997. It was true in 2007. It's true in 2017. And it's true in 2018. And it'll be true in 2027, 28, and 37, 38. That's just what it's going to be. Now, we can make moves to try to shift the culture, but the fact of the matter is, fans, the majority of fans, go to see entertainment venue or go to see or consume a particular form of entertainment to escape their lives, to escape their problems, to enjoy whatever spectacle that they are watching. And they don't want to be reminded of real life while they're trying to escape. So this is not this whole narrative we're hearing nowadays of people saying, you know, that the players need to shut up and play. And that's not just for football. That's for basketball, too, because we all are familiar with the story of the journalist that told LeBron James to shut up and play. This is a common theme and a common narrative that has been expressed publicly and privately, and has also been expressed in terms of viewerships and dollars spent. People turning in their season tickets. They did it in 1987. They did it in 2017. People refusing to watch the programs. People doing all of these things. All of these things that people have done have been done before. And quite frankly, it shows that players not playing does not have as much impact as we think it will. It's the exact same dynamic at work that we saw in 1987, except a little bit different, because now the players are making a whole lot of money. The league is extremely powerful. And with the racial tension that we have in the atmosphere, it is almost absurd to believe that the players can shut the league down by simply not playing, when people support the league and the stance that the league has in terms of making the players stand in terms of their most recent rulings. So we look at the financial piece, and there was a documentary produced by ESPN called Broke that talked about how more than 70% of players go broke after leaving their sport. So we look at the financials piece. We look at the community, the support piece, because let's also face it, our community doesn't have anything in place to support these players when they lose their income. And that is also major and significant. So when you take all those things into account, we really can't be mad at players for not playing. And we really should understand that it really isn't going to change anything. It's not going to affect the bottom line. And to another point, if you aren't willing to take off from your job, you shouldn't be willing to demand that someone else take off from theirs. And I know we get back into that financial argument with that. But to the point of this documentary and the lessons that we can learn that the players refusing to play won't make a major difference. Now, the second point people often make is that nobody would watch if the black folk didn't play. Now, I personally believe that we know that this isn't true deep down in our souls. We know this ain't true. We just don't like to think about it. We don't want to think about it. I mean, this is, simply put, an idea that has been disproven in history so many times that it is unfathomable that people don't want to just acknowledge it. When have white people ever had a problem watching anything that was white only? White people have had no problem watching white only anything. From movies to sports to cartoons, they are good. As long as they are represented, they could give a good goddamn who else is represented. I mean, especially here in America, the culture is such that we call our sports teams world champions when they haven't played anybody else from any other part of the world. We don't care about inclusivity. We don't care about diversity. Not really. We don't care about cultural understanding. So to think that white people who have shown historically and continue to show to this day that they have no problem whatsoever with white-only events, to think that they would not watch anything because the black people are not there is kind of absurd to me. And to another point, we could say, well, the skill level, there would be a change in skill level. We go back to the Negro Leagues. Most people knew that the Negro Leagues was a better brand of basketball, of baseball. It was a more exciting brand of baseball. But yet and still, white people had no problem sticking to their league, their white-only league. And we see this across sports, where black people have always brought a level of athleticism and excitement that was different than what the sport had with an all-white athletic base. And it never stopped white fans from showing up and being excited to watch their events, being excited to watch what they got going on. Now, would there be a drop-off? Of course there would. Of course there would. But here's the deal. Over time, if it walks like football, if it looks like football, if it smells like football, it will become football. The adjustment will be made and the fans will watch, and those that stopped watching will eventually return to the fold. And if anything, it might provide them a sense of cultural strength and unity, because now they know that their sons have an increased opportunity via less competition to actually make it in the league. And now they won't have to worry about all of these other cultural issues showing up. All of these other issues with players not acting the way they think players should act showing up. So I understand the idea that the skill level would drop off and the fans wouldn't watch, but I completely disagree with it. I think there would be a small drop off for a period of time, but let's also remember in this documentary, we were shown that once the Redskins started winning, the fans started cheering. And when the replacement players came back, because they had a very rough first half of their game when the real players came back, the fans started cheering for the Scabs. They started cheering for the replacement players. There is a lot to acknowledge and study in that moment with regards to whether or not the NFL fan base will accept an inferior, what we would call an inferior product. I believe we know deep down in our souls that they would watch. And the NFL would still survive. The third point that people often make, and this is going to be my last point, is that the players have the power. And the simple fact that we have to accept here is, quite plainly, the players don't have the power. The 1987 strike showed us that not only are all the players replaceable, but that the NFL fan base largely supports the league over the players. And this is something that has continued forward. I remember being excited about watching football as a kid in the 80s and 90s. You know, I remember how I felt about my particular team at the time. And there was no loyalty to players. There was loyalty to team and to league. Matter of fact, you would very easily, and you still can very easily, find fans that will go from loving a player to hating a player and back again simply based on who that player plays for. Their loyalty is to the team and to the league. Players come and go. The league endures. That means that essentially the player's only contribution to the pie is a replaceable skill. If it isn't easily replaced in the quality of it, and it isn't. So we don't even have to say if it isn't. We can say even though it isn't easily replaced in the quality of the skill, it is replaced very easily in the availability of the skill. You see, there are no shortage of guys that can run, jump, throw, catch, and ram into each other at full speed. And there is no shortage of guys willing to do it for free, much less get paid to do it. The power in these situations will always be with the consumers of the product, the customers. And in this case, as in with most cases, the consumers care more about being able to consume a good or a service than they do about how it's made or about how the people making it feel. And that is a hard truth that we need to accept across all walks of life, because we all fit in that narrative, that boat. There are very few of us that will see something that we really want and not partake in it because of something else, some deeper issue with regards to that product. We all know about blood diamonds, but yet still we all still want to get or receive a large diamond for a wedding or whatever we got going on, jewelry, any sort of occasion. We all know about child labor, and we all know about all these other things going on, but we all still partake in the goods, the Nikes, and the various other things that are produced. We don't care. We all know about what they're doing in African nations to acquire the components to build electronic gears and cell phones. But yet and still, every 2 weeks, every 2 years, every year, we update to a brand new phone and sign another 2-year contract. Look at Apple. It is well known and documented at this point that when Steve Jobs was alive, he did not believe in philanthropy, and Apple did not donate to charity. They did not believe in corporate social responsibility. And even despite all of that, Apple still became one of the largest tech companies in the world, and Steve Jobs is revered as a god. we want to consume, and we will allow nothing to get away with, get in the way of that. And that is actually the problem. That being said, we should be making strides to develop our own ethical and culturally acceptable forms of entertainment and hitching ourselves to each other in a more foundational and empathetic way. And the bonds we share with each other should supersede the emotional drives we have to consume a product or participate in the creation of a product. We should learn that in this situation, the league has the power and the lion's share of its fan base does not support what we are trying to accomplish, nor do they feel any empathy towards us. Matter of fact, there is a blatant disregard for understanding our perspective or understanding culturally how we got here. They are willfully ignorant and intentionally blind. Which means we are ramming our heads into the proverbial brick wall. If that was ever in doubt, the recent NFL rulings regarding the national anthem should have cleared everything right up. The protest was about brutality towards human beings, but it was twisted in such a way that the discussion about brutality was never had. And now there is a mandate that players will stand for the flag or pay a fine or stay in the locker room. And we know what's going to happen if you're identified as a locker room remainer or however they're going to turn it. You're still going to face some backlash. Effectively shaving a little bit off of our First Amendment rights for the freedom of protest, the freedom of press, and the freedom of assembly. I mean, let's just understand this. What we're dealing with. If you're not interested and developing our own ethical and culturally acceptable forms of entertainment, if you're not interested in building something that black people own, that black people can be proud of, that black athletes can feed their families and support themselves and still provide us with entertainment, if you're not interested in building that, then you really don't understand what we are up against. So, on the whole, the documentary was decent. I give it a solid 3.5 out of 5 stars. It was solidly above average, but nothing spectacular in my opinion, only because of the focus of it being so narrow. They didn't talk about how much the replacements were paid. They only talked really about two teams, and they glossed over a lot of the specific details surrounding the intricacies of the strike. But the film did a really good job of drawing you into the story of the Washington Redskins and their replacements. And while this isn't a film that is going to give you a ton of insight into the player strike itself, it will give you a ton of insight into the culture of America, the culture of the NFL fan base, and the power structure of the NFL, all of which at this moment in time seems supremely important for lots of people. The film can be found on the ESPN website with a subscription to ESPN Plus if you don't already have an ESPN package through your cable provider. And you should definitely check it out if you are interested in involving yourself in player protests and things of that nature. And you should check it out if you're interested in the strategy of cultural change, period, because there's a lot in there to pull. And with that, this has been another episode of Lessons from the Screen. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.